we have to pick our battles in order to win this war. We have to decide what's important enough. It's not important enough for me to take an unsupervised thought and share it with them. Like, you made me feel bad, or I felt bad when you said that. That is still placing blame on them for how I feel. I have found through doing this work that I'm responsible for my own emotions. I'm responsible for my own feelings. When you understand this, it's like this whole world opens up. It changes every relationship that you have, including the one that you have with yourself.
Hey everyone, welcome to Bite Your Tongue, the podcast. Join me, your host, Denise Gorant, as we explore the ins and outs of building healthy relationships with our adult children. Together, we'll speak with experts, share heartfelt stories, and get timely advice addressing topics that matter most to you. Get ready to dive deep and learn to build and nurture deep connections with our adult children. And of course, when to bite our tongues. So let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Bite Your Tongue, the podcast. We're certainly moving fast and furious through season three, and we've got some great episodes and great guests coming up. Stay tuned. You know, in our last episode, we really made a push to ask everyone listening to buy us a virtual cup of coffee for $5. We had such a great response that I really want to give a shout out to some of the donors. Karen with a C, Debbie, Betsy, two anonymous donors, Sandra, Nancy, Mike, Karen with a K, Susan, and Linda. Please know that this means so much to us, and it helps so much too. And for those of you who have not given and still would like to, just go to biteyourtonguepodcast.com, look for the Support Us tab in the upper right-hand corner, and it will take you to the page to buy us a virtual cup of coffee. Thanks so much to all of you for your support. Anyway, enough business. Let's get started. Today, we're welcoming Kim Damon. Kim is a certified life coach and wears a multitude of hats. I first met her at an Empty Nest conference she was producing. I was a guest speaker, and I'll share a link to that video in the episode notes. I wanted to share a quote that she shared on her website. Her website is midlifediscoveries.com. The quote is by Brené Brown, and it says, listen carefully. People may call what happens at midlife a crisis, but it's not. It's an unraveling, a time when you feel a desperate pull to live the life you want to live, not the one you're supposed to live. Let go of who you think you are supposed to be and embrace who you are. With that mantra, Kim left the corporate world and began working with moms, moms who are empty nesters, parents of adult children who are struggling with themselves, their relationships, their children, and their families. And at the end of the episode, I'll tell you more about a support group she has and her weekly email newsletter. After I spoke at the conference, I signed up for her weekly newsletter. And each week, the information she shared would make me pause and think about a lot of things. I thought, you know, she'd be a great guest. So today we're welcoming Kim, and we're going to cover a lot of topics. So welcome, Kim. We're so glad to have you. How in the world did you get into this, leaving the corporate world and this whole idea and journey of working to support mothers and their adult children?
First of all, thanks for having me. This is really exciting for me. So I'll just share a little bit about my journey in terms of my own children. I was in and out of estrangement with my own children, or what I consider estrangement. We went months without talking. But on the flip side, I was also estranged from my own parents for a couple of years. And so I've kind of had it on both ends, and I was really determined to solve the problem. It was a long journey to get there, a lot of education, a lot of research, a lot of training. You know, I even experienced some fallout with my son-in-law as an example. And I'm just going to share a little story, if you don't mind, about what I was like about 10 years ago with my son-in-law. I was not happy that my daughter married my son-in-law at all. Of course, I took the position if they would just let me pick their spouse, everything would be just fine. And I actually thought I would be a really good mother-in-law, but I wasn't. She married someone, and all I could do is focus in on the part where he was a white rapper. So he loved rap music. He produced rap music. It's not exactly what you want your daughter to marry, is a white rapper from Boston. Okay. In the very beginning, I looked for reasons. I looked for all the reasons not to like him. And throughout the years, I've decided to look for the reasons that I love him. And I have found them. I absolutely adore him now. Going through that journey and experiencing that and experiencing periods of difficult times with both of my children have allowed me to come up with a program that allows me to share with other moms, because I didn't know where to go. So that is why I'm here.
Can I ask you how old your daughter was when she was getting married? Was that some of the concern?
Yeah, she was ready. She was in her mid-20s. She knew what she was doing. I mean, she was in love with him. I reflect back now, and their personalities are such a great match with one another that I didn't see that. All I saw was that I wanted her to marry someone else. I wanted her to be with someone else. So that created a lot of conflict with her and I.
And I have another question. Was it that you wanted her to marry someone else, or you were afraid what your friends would think or society? You know, oh, my daughter, she's well-educated. You know, why isn't she taking the route that I took in my life and marrying a business person, or instead she's marrying a rapper? Was it really about you?
It was definitely about me. 100% about me. Plus, they lived in a different place. So there wasn't that. I didn't experience what some moms experience, is that embarrassment of who their child marries or what their child becomes. I didn't have that because they weren't in the same area. I'm sure that that could have contributed to it had they been in the same.
Yeah, because I hear from a lot of parents that we take on too much, like it's a reflection of us, that we can't separate ourselves from them. And I think that can cause a lot of havoc in the relationship if we don't realize it's them, not us. It's their journey and their road, and we embrace whatever it is they're choosing in the best way that we can. Let's get started with some of these questions. I'm going to start with a question from a listener, since you have experience with step-parenting personally and professionally. A listener wrote to me recently and asked if we could do a podcast about stepfathers and step-adult children who do not get along. I think it could be stepmothers and step-adult children too, but she wrote this. Can we talk about that in general when they don't get along? And what would be your thoughts or suggestions?
Yeah, so blended families open up a whole new dynamic, and I don't think that we're prepared for it. So just a little bit about my own story is I do have a blended family, and my husband and I actually dated for 8 years, and we waited for all of our children to be grown up, thinking that we would somehow scoot by all of that conflict. But it didn't really happen. I mean, there was conflict. There was a lot of hard feelings. But most of the hard feelings, I'm going to be quite honest with you, is the fact that my stepchildren actually got along very well with their father. They had a very great relationship with their father, and I didn't have a great relationship at the time with my children. Mm. So kind of this jealousy, you know, I'm responsible for this jealousy, started to seep into our marriage. Actually, they were texting him all the time. They were calling him all the time. And I became annoyed. And I was annoyed because I felt bad. I was missing out. I felt like that fifth wheel. Yeah. And especially because my kids were not doing the same.
Well, and you wrote something about that, I think, in one of your emails where you said you were spending family time with your stepkids and missing your own children so much. So what were the steps you took to resolve that? What could we offer our listeners that might be helpful? How do you move forward from that if you're having those feelings?
Well, first of all, you know, I believe that marriages are, or stepkids, when we're going through this, are a casualty. Like they, this is a side casualty to you having difficulties with your own children in my particular case. When I started to solve my own problems, when I started to be 100% responsible for my own thoughts and feelings and emotions and stepping up to the plate and understanding what was going on in my own mind, they were a side benefit. My relationship started to improve with them. And I started to allow myself not to feel guilty when I was with them and to actually be a part of the family, because I was being the fifth wheel. I was deciding that I was the fifth wheel. Now, there's other dynamics that happen. I can recall when my father had a girlfriend that moved in, and here I come home to my childhood home and I start rummaging through the cupboards to get what I need. All of a sudden, I see somebody, a woman standing there looking at me like, why are you going through my cupboards? You know, there's always different dynamics and different situations that we can learn from. But the biggest thing that I can offer her is that our supervising our brain and understanding that we are human and we're going to tell ourselves stories that really aren't necessarily true. Get very factual in your emotions and your circumstances. What's going on? What's happening? Be very factual, like it's the court of law. And you're going to find that most of what you're telling yourself are these huge stories that you've invented.
With your own children, I mean, I can see sort of working, you know, you're living there, the stepchildren are around, but you're also feeling estranged from your own children. How do you backpedal into that? I mean, I think a lot of what you're saying, if I'm understanding this correctly, and I believe this in so many aspects, is to look at yourself. We build up resentment. They aren't calling me on my birthday. They don't like me. I asked them to send a card to their Aunt Betty and they never did it. So no one likes me. I mean, is it lack of self-esteem on our part? And do you speak to your adult children about this when you're feeling this estrangement, resentment? What are the steps?
Well, I actually do now. I speak to them now, but at the time I didn't. I didn't understand what was happening.
How did you get to the not speaking to the speaking? That's what I want to get to.
You have to understand that you're catastrophizing. Okay. So you're taking one thought. Well, they didn't send me a card for my birthday. Turns into, I must not be important enough. Now I've noticed. And then you go into, well, I've noticed they haven't called for 3 weeks or 4 weeks. I must not be important enough. There must be something wrong with me because other people aren't experiencing this. You get into this negative thought loop and you just play the same old record over and over and over in your brain. And it feels heavy. It feels terrible to get out of it. One technique I use is I journal. I do a bullet journal and I just lay out all of those thoughts that I'm having about this situation. And then I go back and I ask myself, is this one true? And then if it's not true, I know my children love me. So when I say they don't care about me, it's not true. So I cross it off. And then I get down to the thoughts that I do believe are true. And I stay with those thoughts. And I allow myself to feel bad about them.
Do you express that to your children if you feel bad about something? What would be the words you would use for that?
I have, in the sense of what I feel is important. So this gets into, should you bite your tongue or should you not bite your tongue, right?
Right.
You know, seriously, we have to pick our battles in order to win this war. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have to decide what's important enough. It's not important enough for me to take an unsupervised thought and share it with them. Like, you made me feel bad, or I felt bad when you said that. That is still placing blame on them for how I feel. And honestly, you know, I have found through doing this work that I'm responsible for my own emotions. I'm responsible for my own feelings. When you understand this, it's like this whole world opens up. It changes every relationship that you have, including the one that you have with yourself.
You are so 100% right with this. And I think I've just learned this over time and I work on it on a daily basis. It's almost like looking at the world in a different way. when I'm negative, it's because when I think someone doesn't like me or I'm upset with someone, if I turn around and look inside myself, I can change the whole situation.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I think so many of us don't. Choose to be happy, I guess. Choose to be accepting. Mm-hmm. Choose to, instead of choosing to judge or choosing to not like or choosing to feel awful, choose to be happy. Choose to be accepting and choose what's ever laid in front of you, I guess. Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit about biting your tongue, and I want to talk about this whole concept of withdrawing, which you've written about before. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we're so afraid of saying the wrong thing that we're biting our tongues all the time. And that can make for a not very close relationship, or actually not a relationship. I don't know, what would you call it if there's not a give and take? You said something like, you avoid conflict. I think these were your words. Avoid conflict for fear of losing a relationship with their adult children, or they knuckle their way through every conversation. What advice would you give listeners on this?
This is like walking on eggshells. Okay?
Right.
You know, we want to stop walking on eggshells, but we think that they need to change in order for us to stop walking on eggshells. They need to be less critical. But really, what we need to do is just be ourselves. Number one, we just need to be ourselves. When our children are not themselves, we pick up on this. They're going to pick up on it when we're not ourselves. The other thing is that what I see is three different ways that we handle conflict in anything, not just with our kids, but we either avoid it or we resist it or we react to it. And my number one was withdrawing and avoiding it. So I could sit there, for example, and I could say, well, my son hasn't called me in 2 months. I haven't called him in 2 months. It's about taking responsibility. Like, I can even be 100% responsible for a relationship that I have with my father who's passed still to this day. So I can certainly be 100% responsible for the relationship and carry the relationship until we're both in it. For example, I can make phone calls. I can reach out and text. But we have maybe some of these old beliefs that our kids should call us. We called our parents, now they should call us. So I have to examine all of those beliefs that I used to have. And I have to decide if I want to keep them or if my relationship with my children are more important than some old belief that doesn't really make any sense. Mm-hmm. And so I have to notice that I'm avoiding. I have to notice what I'm doing. And I'll tell you, the telltale sign that you're avoiding is that you'll look for something else to fill its spot.
Explain that.
We call it buffering. Buffering our emotions. We tend to turn to something that's making us, kind of giving us that short-term pleasure. For me, it was food. I gained probably, I would say, about 45 pounds through all of this.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that shows sadness for sure.
Mm-hmm. For some people, it's social media. They'll over anything that you, it could be work. It could be, gambling. It could be drinking. Anything that you're indulging in order to avoid your emotions, that's your telltale sign that you need to spend a little time with your emotions to figure that out. And it's very, it can be very uncomfortable, but that discomfort, that short-term discomfort is going to save you from all of that long-term dysfunction in your family.
You say be yourself, okay? Mm-hmm. I find that's one of the hardest things because I'm a very talkative person. So many times my adult children do not like when I engage with people in restaurants or engage with people on the streets. This is how I've been my whole life. I'm not myself all the time because I'm stopping and thinking all the time, not biting my tongue, but thinking about what I'm going to say. So that idea of being yourself is hard sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are certain subjects that we may want to avoid because they do cause conflict. Political. Maybe one of those areas where we can't agree. However, if we can manage to get to the point where our relationship is open with our children, that we can have a discussion and have different opinions and be okay with not trying to convince the other person that they need to have the same opinion as us, then we're able to do more of being ourselves. But you are correct. I mean, there are times where, especially with politics or religion, that we may have to bite our tongue. And this is where we get to experience the failure of it. And what I mean by that is, I like the idea of becoming very resilient to failure. Like, I get to try things with my kids and I get to see what works and what doesn't work. Okay. And if it doesn't work to have a conversation with them, or it doesn't work to act a certain way with them, or be completely myself and talkative, as you talked about, then I get to say, okay, well, that didn't work. What's next? Instead of looking at it like I have failed somehow and I can never be myself, because that's what we do. We go into that, again, we go into that catastrophizing. We go into the words like, I can never be myself, or I'm always criticized. Instead, we can say, well, this is an area that they want me to scale back on. And I think it's perfectly normal to have that happen. We all have different personalities. And I know, you know, from my standpoint, that was an area that made me extremely uncomfortable with my own mother. Like, she would speak her mind a lot to people, even strangers. And I would be like, oh, please stop. And we've had those discussions. We've had to have those discussions. And she scaled it back. Sometimes we can scale it back, but we can still be ourselves. We can still be open and honest with people and chat up a stranger.
I love the way you said that, because I think that what I've come to realize, and again, I am no expert, so anything I'm saying here is just what I've learned or through my own experience. Our children are adults. Even though I bore her, she's still a completely separate person, my son too. And you know what? We're different around different people. So if I'm with someone who has completely different political views than I do, I don't talk politics, even whether they're my child or not my child. I might have better table manners with one friend than I would another friend. Mm-hmm. So if I start looking at my adult children as autonomous adults who I love more than any other adult, it helps me realize I'm just myself in a different way.
Yes, absolutely. And I kind of think of it like, I don't know if you're familiar with the Enneagram.
Someone told me about this. I'm going to do an episode on it.
Okay. So I am also an Enneagram coach.
Why don't you tell our listeners what that is? Because I'm familiar with it, but they might not be.
So the Enneagram is really, it's 9 different personality types. And, you know, you can take a self-test, but I would really recommend diving into it, because some of these tests that you find online may be skewed a little bit depending on the mood you're in when you take the test.
Like the Myers-Briggs.
Yeah, it's very similar. Only this gets down to understanding what we're like in relationships, what we're like in conflict, and what we're like with our own inner being. And what I loved about it and what I noticed about it with my children, I have the benefit of knowing what types they are as well as what type I am. They're very assertive people. As I would describe them, they're very intense. And when they get intense, I get very anxious. So what's interesting about that is that I can raise up my intensity to have a conversation with them, and I can communicate better with them. Also, by understanding their personality and my personality, I'm not taking things as personal as I used to. I used to view my son as being a little angry when actually he's just really passionate about what he believes. And so understanding what exactly their personality type is helps me as a mom either scale it back a little bit or step forward into communicating better with them. It doesn't mean that I can't be authentic. It just means that I'm meeting a person where they're at.
I love that. So I'm going to have information in the episode notes, and I'll even do some social media if people want to do this with you, since you are a coach. All right, we're talking a lot, so I'm going to move into a couple other things here. I want to move into these boundaries. And after I wrote about that, I wanted to talk to you about this, you sent something out about ultimatums and boundaries and all this sort of thing. And I'm trying to understand it. So I think one of the things you said was, when even simple requests like filling up a gas tank or taking out the trash go ignored, maybe it's time to consider a boundary. The great part is that it's your choice. So that's where I don't understand these boundaries. What do you mean by that? Why is, so if, let's think about adult children. You're not usually saying, fill up the gas tank. They could borrow your car and you might say, can you fill the tank when you come back? Okay. Or you can ask them to send you something that you left at their house and it never comes back to you. So what do you mean consider time to set a boundary?
First, we have to understand that there's a difference between making a request and actually a boundary. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to give an example of a request that my daughter made of me. I didn't notice that I was sharing some not flattering experiences that she had as a child with my granddaughter. Mm-hmm. And so she said to me, please don't do that.
That's a request.
And that was her request. That's a request. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, I didn't really notice that. Thanks for pointing it out. I could see her point of view. We had a nice discussion about it. I didn't get offended. Where we need boundaries, we've made a request that they haven't honored. And now we have to make a loving request with a consequence.
Can you give us an example of that?
Yeah, I actually used one on my kids. I have two children who do not get along.
Okay.
They argue all the time. Both of them are very intense. Both of them are very opinionated. And really what I noticed is that I get extremely nervous. They love to argue. And so the boundary I set for them is that if you're going to argue, I'm going to be leaving the room.
Okay.
You know, if you're going to argue, if you're going to have this discussion, and it transpired. So we were all sitting out on the deck and they started real subtle at first, but mom knows it's coming. I can see it in their eyes. And they begin to argue. I begin to get uncomfortable and I stand up and I say, if you guys are going to argue, I'm going to go inside. When you're done, come and get me.
Now, do you need to say that or can you quietly leave? Because I'm thinking of another situation. You know, maybe your child smokes pot. Okay. And it's legal in Colorado. It's legal in many places. And you just don't like it. Maybe you don't like it in general. Maybe you don't like it for him or her. And you really just don't want to be around when they're smoking pot. Can you just choose to leave? Or do you think you should say, you know what? You know, I'm not comfortable with this. So I'm going to leave. Or how that sort of is judgmental if you say it that way. How would you approach that?
Well, first of all, I think that part of our problem is that we don't communicate our boundaries, but we have these invisible lines. When they cross them, we get upset, but we haven't even shared it with them. It's a little bit like making, you know, having an expectation that they're not going to smoke marijuana when they're around you. What I could do is I could say, listen, I would really appreciate if you wouldn't smoke around me. I don't like it. I don't agree with it. But if you do, understand that I'm going to get up and I'm going to probably quietly leave the room. You don't have to declare it every time. But letting them know that there is this consequence, it's going to feel awkward. You're going to stand up. You're going to walk out of the room. You know, you're not going to go off with a huff. But
yeah, you're not going to stamp. Right. Okay. All right. Let's go to people pleasing. You've written about this. I've heard from many parents that have written to me about this, that they feel sometimes of a feeling of obligation, wanting this kid to be happy all the time, forgetting about ourselves. One mother wrote that even if she can't afford the sweater her daughter wants, she'll buy it just to make her daughter happy. Why do we do this as parents?
Well, I think we're used to buying love in some sort of fashion. We're used to connecting with people through gifts or through favors. Now, there are people out there, and you understand this with the Enneagram, but there are people out there with personalities that just love to help. That's part of who they are. Nothing wrong with someone that wants to help or wants to give. They may actually enjoy doing it. But when you start using what you do as a form of keeping a list in your brain of all the things you've done for this person, and you start to resent it, or you start to resent them for not giving back, that's when you really need to take a pause and notice if you're people pleasing. You know, I'm going to tell you, people pleasing is a lie. It's an absolute lie.
What do you mean by that?
It's unauthentic. It's a form of manipulation when mm-hmm. we do it. Mm-hmm. When we want to truly help someone, we're either helping them or we're people pleasing them, right? Helping them is a whole different situation. If you just want to help them, then you're doing that because you're doing that from, you're coming from a place of love instead of wanting to be accepted.
That sort of makes me think about something my mother always told me, which sounds like it might be wrong. She would always say when I had conflict with people, and maybe this is avoiding conflict, kill them with kindness. Meaning, you know, if you have a neighbor that you just can't stand or is really bugging you, bring them a bouquet of flowers. Now, is that people pleasing? And sometimes when you do this, it does completely resolve any conflict. You know, they might be mad at you for not parking your car in your driveway the right way, or not, I don't know, mowing your grass properly. And it's driving you crazy. So the nicer you are to them, the less apt they are to get angry at you. What is that?
Now, you can be just a kind person where you want to make friends with them. But if you're doing it to get back at them and to show them that you're above them, you have to question your motives.
Yeah.
And our kids are going to see right through this. This mm-hmm. is what I think that we think we're crafty at it when we're people pleasing. For example, let's just play a scenario out where we have a little get together at our daughter's house and everyone is having a nice time, a conversation, and something is said that makes us feel uncomfortable. So we get up and declare we're going to go do the dishes. Okay. We're doing the dishes not because we want to help. We're doing the dishes to get away from the situation. We're doing the dishes to avoid the conversation. We're people pleasing for the wrong motive.
I think that's okay to leave the situation and just go do something else and not cause conflict. You know, why not just get up, let them continue the conversation and do something productive?
Well, you can do that. I mean, you can certainly do what you want to do. But again, you have to, as long as you're not carrying that forward into
right.
I can't be myself or can't have a relationship with my kids. I'm always doing things for them. They're doing nothing for me.
Mm.
You can do this if it's a pure motive.
Yeah. Okay. Sometimes I'm tired of talking and I just want to go. And so I'll go clean the kitchen.
Maybe a better example would be like babysitting.
Okay.
A lot of times our kids will ask us to babysit a lot. And we start to feel, okay, this isn't, you know, they're always asking. Every single weekend I have to babysit. And pretty soon it's like, well, I never get to see them. I always, you know, they just drop the kids off. When it begins to create resentment, so obligation holds hands with resentment.
Yeah, I like that. Obligation holds hands with resentment.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to, I'm going to ask you as a coach, what key things come up? Is that okay? Can I move to that? Kim, you're the coach. You talk to so many people on a regular basis. Can you give us some stories and advice to go with it without sort of giving away confidential information? Things that you think our listeners might be facing and some thoughts or ideas on how to overcome these.
Yeah, so, you know, I think the biggest word I hear is disrespect. I hear a lot of wording around my kids disrespect me. And what I've come to understand through coaching them is that we first have to respect who we are as people. Honestly, some of the stories that I've heard are disrespectful.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah, sure. I could give you a great example. So in a particular call I had where a mom had been told by her children or her son and daughter-in-law that she ruined their wedding pictures because she's so fat. So when we hear this, my question is that we have to ask ourselves is instead of asking why they are disrespecting us, we need to be asking why we're allowing it. Okay. What are the motives behind why we're allowing it? What are we afraid of? Most of them come back with, I'm afraid of losing my children. I'm afraid of losing that relationship.
So how should that mother-in-law have responded? If the daughter-in-law said, you ruined our wedding pictures, you just look so fat.
I think that this is a situation that deserves a very good boundary. Okay. Now we know that these comments are coming. This just doesn't appear out of anywhere. We don't talk to our parents that way unless we've been talking to our parents. So the first thing we have to do is understand what our own boundaries even are, because most of us don't. How far are we willing to take it? Like, for example, in terms of disrespect, it's so subjective. I mean, my daughter rolls her eyes at me all the time. It doesn't bother me. I think it's funny. We laugh about it. It's not a big deal. For another parent, it might be very disrespectful. Disrespect is very subjective. You need to get very clear on what is actually, you know, you're just having a thought about it. You're just having an emotion over what was said or what was done, versus what is really disrespectful that you need to create a boundary. And then at the point in which it happens, you need to say, it's not okay for you to speak to me like that. And if you continue to speak to me like that, then I'm going to shut down the conversation. We'll no longer be having a conversation about this. Or you don't get to say to me anything about my weight. You knew exactly how much I weighed when you took the picture, and I'm not okay with you speaking to me like that.
It's really hard, because when you feel overweight and someone says that, it's like a stab in the heart.
Well, here's the deal, is that a lot of times we don't plan for this stuff. We know that it's happening, but we don't make plans to address it. We don't even know what our boundaries are. And it's interesting to me, because when we go on vacation, we make plans. Okay. We make reservations. We determine what our obstacles are going to be and how we're going to handle it. We figure out where we're going to stay, what we're going to do. But when it comes to our kids being disrespectful, we just sit there and we take it. We don't sit down and make a plan. If this is said, this is what I'm going to do. If this happens, this is how I'm going to handle it. So the first step is really defining what your boundaries actually are. And once you begin to define it, even if you're taken by surprise by something new, you're going to be able to pull one of those out of your back pocket. And you're going to be able to do it in a loving way and in a very calm way. And when we do it in a loving and calm way, we're very powerful.
Mm-hmm. So I understand what you're saying. And I think calmly and lovingly is the way to do it, sometimes the hardest way to do it. I guess my fear by setting that boundary, my daughter-in-law might say to me, well, if you feel that way, we just won't be talking to you anymore. And then we set up this estrangement.
Yeah, it's completely possible, unfortunately. However, I personally, and this is just my personal preference, and you have to ask yourself what yours is, I'm not okay with someone telling me that I ruined their wedding pictures because I'm fat. I would rather stand up for myself and show my family how to be a person of integrity, to be an authentic person, than I would to allow that kind of language to come my way. Now, if we begin in the, you know, this is why we really need to hit this at an early stage. Like, we really need to make sure that we're being transparent with our kids, or, you know, daughter-in-law or son-in-law, in terms of, you know, listen, I realize that we might not see eye to eye, but I'm not okay with you saying these things to me. So can we sit down and talk about it?
And you definitely do it with the daughter-in-law or son-in-law, not talk to your son or daughter and say, you know, your wife's being a yucky person to me.
Correct.
You talk to them directly or together. Yeah,
I would do it together. So there's mm-hmm. no misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to tell you that a lot of moms, and I was one of those, like, I felt like my daughter-in-law or my son-in-law, when they entered the family, that they should come in and they should fit in. And I'm going to tell you that is the wrong attitude. I should have welcomed them into the family. I should have extended that welcome.
Yes, yes.
At the time, I didn't know any better, and I definitely would do that differently now. But If you're going to have a problem with a certain person, it's only right that we go to that person.
Yeah.
The right thing to do.
I love what you said there about inviting them into the family. I've been listening to this podcast with Michelle Obama called The Light. I just love it. And she talks about two people coming together from two completely different worlds. Yeah. I guess Barack came from a family where there was a lot of hugging because they were far away from each other. So when they saw each other, they hugged each other. Michelle came from a family where they saw each other every day. So you didn't hug goodbye because you're going to see them in an hour. And meshing those kind of worlds together is a real challenge in marriage, relationships, families, all of that. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. Anyway, all right, we should probably wrap up a little bit. So as you know, I always ask my guests to leave our listeners with two or three things that are going to be really important to take away from this podcast. Can you wrap us up with that, Kim?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I think that the biggest thing is that we can be 100% responsible for getting results in our lives. If we just simply start planning ahead and planning out our results, when we know we have a birthday coming up and we know maybe one of our children isn't going to reach out or maybe not call us, we can create our own day. We can be responsible for having a great day and not letting that ruin our day. It takes a little practice. It takes reaching out to your uncomfortable level. Being 100% responsible for your own happiness would be my number one. I think number two is healing your emotions yourself is something that doesn't require your children to change. Okay. You can heal the relationship without anyone changing other than you and how you feel about yourself, how you would internalize some of these things that have been happening. And the last one is that you're not alone. You know, I know you hear it a lot. But what I'm finding out there is that people don't understand how wide and what an epidemic this has become. Mm-hmm. One out of four in the U.S. have someone in their family that's estranged. And I guarantee you, most of those are children. So get support. Mm-hmm. Reach out and find that person that resonates with you and get help to mend that relationship and mend yourself, heal yourself.
Thank you, Kim. This was so wonderful. I will definitely put in my episode notes and on social media, your website, and also the, I never can pronounce that word right, anagrams?
Enneagram.
Enneagrams. Yeah. Okay, sorry. All that and anything else you'd like me to share. I'm so glad you reached out to me about a year ago when you did your conference and we got to know each other. I really value so much that you have to say. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Denise.
Thanks so much again to Kim Damon for her honesty. Kim's life experiences have given her lots of insight. We hope to hear more about what you think of the interview and the advice Kim offers. Please email us at biteyourtonguepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think, and we'd also love to hear some ideas that you'd like us to do for episodes. Kim has a podcast of her own. It's called Midlife Worthy Moms, helping moms embark on their journey as empty nesters. You should tune in. I think you'll like it. Kim also has a coaching service called midlifediscoveries.com. A one-on-one with Kim would certainly be quite a treat. I'll share all of these links in our episode notes. Thanks again so much to Connie Gorant-Fisher, our audio engineer. Remember, as Kim says, you're in charge of your own feelings. But sometimes you may have to bite your tongue.